This is the Preservation Technology Podcast, bringing innovation to preservation. The Preservation Technology Podcast is a production of the National Center for Preservation Technology and Training, a unit of the National Park Service.
My name's Dr. Catherine Cooper. I am here with
Dr. Bonnie Clark of the University of Denver. I lead the DU Amachi Project, and I am a professor and curator of archaeology at the University of Denver.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Happy to do it.
Could you tell us a bit about how you started working at Amachi and why are you focusing on the gardens?
I will say that the gardens are one of the reasons that I started to work at Amachi, because I've always been interested in the way that people live out their identity on a day-to-day basis, and especially when that identity is under siege. And I think that the way that people make places is one of the ways that you can really see that. And so I had read through a report that was done by a cultural resources firm here in Colorado for a grant-funded project that was actually co-sponsored by a group of former Amachi incarcerees. And I saw that there were a number of remains of gardens that were there. And so I think about the fact that here are these people who are being incarcerated in large part because they don't seem quite American enough. And so then they're building a number of different gardens, including some that are very traditional Japanese style gardens. And I just was fascinated by what we might be able to learn about these gardens and the stories that they might tell to a larger public.
So you've worked at Amachi for a number of seasons. Can you talk about why you decided to write the book at this point? And are you continuing the study?
I wanted to get the book out because, for those of you who read it, it's called Finding Solace in the Soil. And I worked with a number of Amachi survivors on the book. And whether it was because they shared with me their stories, they shared with me family photographs, their own remembrances. And so I really wanted to get it out while those folks could see it and appreciate it and also give me some feedback on it. So to be my ethical peer reviewers. I had 6 field seasons worth of data at that time, which is a lot of data. And I knew if I waited until the project was all the way over, it was too long. And so I was excited to be able to pull together the information that I had from the over a dozen gardens that we've excavated and the hundreds of gardens that we've surveyed. So I felt like we had enough data, but I will tell you that there will have to be a second edition because of the new information that's coming out, both through our survey, through some of the digitization of our digital imagery, and also through this just blockbuster excavation that I just got back from. I will say we have worked on a lot of different kinds of gardens, lots of the entryway gardens that people built for themselves you're coming into your barrack. We've also looked at some of the public space vegetable gardens, as well as public space sort of center of block gardens. What we hadn't looked at before this field season in terms of excavations were mess hall gardens, which are really important because people stand in line at mess halls. They spend a lot of time there, and gardens really relieve some of that, you know, sort of the boredom of standing in line. They also, in the high plains, importantly, provide shade, which is very particularly important during the summertime. And so this summer, we identified a mess hall garden that wrapped all the way around a mess hall that used lots and lots of pieces of concrete that are left over from the process of building the camp, because all of the buildings are on concrete foundations. And so they're taking some of these, and in some places, they're just using them as sort of to make the walls that are just set onto the ground. But in other instance, we had this amazing feature that takes these and then put them all together with fresh cement into what we first looked at and thought was a pond. And as we investigated it more, we've decided that at least on some occasions, it was a waterfall.
In certain parts of the book, you've mentioned the concept of giri. How does that relate to the archaeological practice you've set up at the site?
Well, so giri is really interesting. It's a set of relationships that people find themselves in, and they have overtones of both gift and obligation. And I kind of learned this in just being at many community events where I showed up And there were always like gifts to be given away. And then the expectation that you will send a thank you. And then these relations kind of continue on. I started to think about the remains that we found at the site as giri, so that they are a gift from the past, but they're also an obligation to the future. And so we exist in relationship with them. And then if we think about them in this way, by teaching my students this concept of giri, I think it helps them understand that it's more than just data, right? And it's more that working with these things obligates us to both them and to the people who made them and to the people who care about them.
From when you said about why you wrote the book, when you wrote the book is giri too. What will people see of the gardens if they visit Amachi today, as opposed to what the survivors would have experienced when they built the gardens?
You're going to have some imagination. Because the vast majority of the plants and the vast majority of the what we would call more hardscaping, so, you know, limestone walls and things like those, are evidenced by relatively subtle, you might have some decaying limestone that suggests that underneath there would be a limestone wall. The thing that is the most striking and that people will see are trees. There are thousands of trees at Amachi. Every single one of them either was planted by an Amachian or is the descendant of one of those trees. And so because it's up on the high plains on a sort of terrace up above in like these sort of stabilized sand dunes. So no trees belong there. So each of those trees that are in the original location, and many of them are still alive. Now, some of them are dead and they're standing, and some of them are dead and fallen. But the ones that are still survive, I like to think of them as witness trees. You know, so they were there at the time, and then now we can be there and have a relationship with them. We have a few other things. There are some roses that still survive 80 years later out at Amachi. A few other plants that were transplanted that are survived, especially the cactus. So there's some choya, which is a type of cactus that doesn't really grow right there in that part of Colorado, that has been transplanted, and those have survived. So it's the very hardy plants that have survived. But you know, you're not going to see some of the other stuff that I get through pollen. You're not going to see the lilies, and you're not going to see the cattails, and you're not going to see the dogwood or the plum trees. So those, again, you have to kind of use your imagination to know that when you see these trees, they were also accompanied with all sorts of other rich plantings. There were wooden fences, there were pergolas, there were benches, there were birdhouses, just a lot. So you can see, there's definitely hints of it. You can see little concrete ponds, like the one that I was talking about. It's very visible. It's right there at the mess hall. But others, again, are going to take a little more imagination.
Amachi has recently become part of the National Park Service. How does that affect your work going forward?
Well, you know, it means that it's going to be even more collaborative than it is already, which is kind of amazing, given that I work with such a broad variety of stakeholders, from high schoolers to Amachi survivors. So now we'll roll in another partner in terms of thinking about our planning and how we're going to curate the collections that come out of it. So we've got a lot of conversations that have happened, but every national park is, as a, you know, and all parcels of land that are managed by the federal government, you know, are supposed to have a full archaeological survey, and most of them don't. And so the fact that we are systematically slowly going block by block through Amachi to do this means that we're helping the park meet an unfunded mandate. And I actually was just on a Zoom call with the Park Service staff today. And so they are really hoping that we can continue this really robust research, collaborative research program, and kind of roll them into the planning of it and the management of it.
What do you hope that readers will take away from the book or do with what they've learned, even if they can't visit the site in person?
Well, first off, I think that reading through the book and just, you know, looking at the photographs and, you know, spending a little time even going to the Amachi website is to think about how when you're singled out, that you don't have to respond to inhumanity with inhumanity, Like, you can do something beautiful and humane in response. Like, you can build a garden in your prison. And in fact, you probably ought to build a garden in your prison, because it's going to make you feel a whole lot better. And it's going to keep you in tune with some of those natural cycles that being out of control can help you, like, kind of spins us into unhealthy patterns, that gardening in particular can kind of help us be literally grounded in a way that's much more healthy for us. So that's kind of one of the, I think, the takeaways. I also have a sort of recipe for an Emachi inspired garden. So, and this is just based on the hundreds of gardens we've surveyed and the over dozen gardens that we've test excavated. You need to find something that's value has been overlooked. So maybe it's a pot that is already cracked and you're going to still use it to plant something in, or maybe it's a corner of your yard that, you know, has been underappreciated, or maybe it's some other cast off that still might have some beauty within it if set in the right way. And then you want to include something that relates to your heritage. So maybe it's a heritage plant, maybe it's a stone from a home place or an important location. Maybe it's even an object, you know, that is, that has some of that kind of connection for you. And then you want to do something that's local to where you are, to where the garden is. So maybe that's a native plant. Maybe, again, it's a stone that you've gathered from nearby and that you incorporate all of those into some kind of a little design. So I actually have a little Emachi inspired garden in my backyard that I sort of took that template and made. It's in a broken pot that then I take where the broken part is, and that's where I trail out the trailing part of the plant so that it flows over and kind of looks like it belongs in there. And then my local thing is I have a stone that I actually picked up at the Arkansas River, which is what flows nearby Emachi and also is in the southern part of our state. I also use a native plant in there. And then I have a piece of stone that I actually picked up from a favorite family fishing hole in Utah, which is where I'm from. So something that I want people to hope to sort of embrace from the Emachi story is about how the Asian American heritage and Asian American history is American history. And in terms of the vast impact that in this instance that Japanese had on farming practices throughout the United States, and the way that as they were dispersed across the country during World War II, that they made all of these different connections. And, you know, I am out there at the site and, or even telling the story, and people come up and they talk to me about their, like, I know someone who was at Minidoka and they are a family friend, which is the National Park Service site and former incarceration camp in Idaho. Or I grow this particular type of vegetable that I found out recently was developed by a Japanese farmer, which is so true of so many of our really important varieties of both sort of vegetable crops as well as flowers. And so that's kind of one of the things that I think these gardens help us see is the way that there's this deep history of horticulture and connection to nature that sort of flourished in Japan, was brought to the United States, and then flourished here in this very interesting and complicated way and in a complicated time.
Thank you so much for sharing all of this with us today.
This was a presentation of the Preservation Technology Podcast, produced by the National Center for Preservation Technology and Training. To find more podcasts like this one, please visit our website,